Good morning. It's Wednesday, September 4th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, the Florida Republicans who want to protect abortion access, why it's so hard to make football safer for kids and adults, and a Paralympian who medaled twice without really meaning to. But first, it's back to school week for many kids across the country, and in at least 8 states, things will be pretty different because of new policies that either ban or limit the use of cell phones during school hours.
This feels like it's gone from a trickle, a here and there, to sort of a tsunami of change.
That's Laura Meckler, a national education writer at The Washington Post. She's been tracking changes in cell phone policies over the last year in Indiana, Louisiana, South Carolina, Nevada, and more. It started with Florida, which passed a law requiring public schools to ban student cell phone use during class and block access to social media on the school Wi-Fi. Since then, Meckler and her colleagues found at least 7 of the 20 largest school districts in the country have banned cell phones during the school day, and several others are considering policies to limit them. She says the pressure is coming from a lot of places: government officials, parents, school administrators.
Top of the list is teachers who are concerned about distractions in school.
A 2023 survey by Pew found 72% of high school teachers say phone distraction is a major problem for students. So major that one teachers' union in Cleveland even made a ban a condition in their new contract. Parents largely agree that phones are a problem. In a survey by the National Parents Union, 70% of parents said kids should not be allowed to use phones in class. But more than half of them also said there should be wiggle room during other parts of the day, like lunch or recess. And in some cases, parents have pushed back on phone bans, saying they need a way to communicate with their kids in an emergency.
From students, what you'll often hear is that, you know, we live in a world with technology. Students need to learn how to manage it. Just taking it away isn't the answer, that they can learn to use it responsibly.
Many school districts are trying to find a middle ground on restrictions, like in Hillsborough County, Florida, which Meckler highlighted in her reporting. Kids there in middle school and elementary school have to put away and mute their phones during school hours. But once they hit high school, they can use their phones at lunch. We still don't know very much about the long-term impact of cell phone bans in schools. One study from 2022 following college students concluded that taking away phones could potentially improve learning, comprehension, and anxiety for younger students. Other global studies have offered mixed results on how phone bans impact school performance and cyberbullying. One principal of a high school told Meckler his observation. He's noticing kids talking more, using the library more, and just being kids, which he says has been nice to see. Let's turn now to the topic of abortion on the ballot. The issue will be put to voters in 10 states in November. In Florida, a small but growing movement of Republican women are publicly pushing for a measure to change the state constitution to overturn the state's 6-week abortion ban. Laura Casisto with The Wall Street Journal spent some time in the state speaking with these women.
I think really what they say motivated them are these really what they think of as traditional Republican values, things like a love of freedom, limited government, and a feeling like their party has just veered too far to the right on this issue and abandoned those values in heavily restricting this procedure.
Some of them recently held local office as Republicans.
These are people who are actively involved in the party, who have been elected to office as Republicans, who have worked as party officials, who have been appointed to positions by Republican governors. I think it really does show the kind of crisis that the party is in about this issue right now. The current sort of approach is kind of alienating a meaningful constituency.
Former President Trump, who's taken credit for appointing Supreme Court justices who overturned Roe v. Wade, has struggled to land on a clear abortion message throughout the campaign.
What you see is Trump being pulled by two different forces.
There's concern that supporting restrictive abortion policies could be bad for Republicans in the fall. Last week, Trump seemed to acknowledge those concerns by suggesting he would support the Florida ballot measure, saying he feels that the 6-week ban is, quote, too short. But after pushback from anti-abortion advocates, he flipped his position a few days later.
I think that Trump and other Republicans are genuinely right now fumbling towards a position on this issue and just not sure where to land.
Since 2022, ballot measures supporting abortion access have passed with strong support, even in relatively red states like Ohio and Kansas. But Casisto says the measure in Florida will be the most difficult test yet for the abortion rights movement. They need 60% support for it to pass.
That means they need to get a very significant number of Republicans to vote for it. By some estimates, about 40% of Republicans are going to need to vote for it to pass. And so I do think that that's a reason why you see quite an organized effort to get Republicans on board in Florida to make this measure feel very bipartisan, to speak in a language that's going to appeal to conservative voters.
As we head into this school year, there's an alarming trend in youth football. At least 7 teenage football players died in the month of August. Some were because of suspected heat stroke. At least 2 of them, a 13-year-old from West Virginia and a 16-year-old from Alabama, died after sustaining traumatic head injuries.
You're in disbelief. You wish it was a bad dream that you could wake up from. It's agony inside that I can't put words to it. It's terrible.
That's Ryan Craddock, the father of 13-year-old Cohen, speaking with the local NBC affiliate in West Virginia. He says his son took a bad hit during practice drills while wearing a helmet and died the next day after experiencing brain bleeding and swelling. According to a national research group that tracks traumatic sports injuries, last year, at least 16 young people died in incidents either directly or indirectly related to football. That's looking at youth leagues up through the college level. The medical director of this research group, Dr. Robert Cantu, told NBC he's as alarmed as he's been for 30 years. He says looking at the data, football is by far and away the most dangerous sport for kids. Some parents, including Cohen's dad, are now pushing for better headgear as a potential solution. They want to see schools embrace using a type of padded cap that goes on top of the helmet called guardian caps. You might even spot them on the field this week when the new NFL season kicks off. The professional league has embraced this product in recent years, and for the first time, players will be allowed to wear the caps in regular season games. The NFL claims these caps have cut down the number of concussions in the league by up to 50%. But CNN reports scientists are generally skeptical of those claims because the NFL hasn't yet released data to back them up. Several independent research groups say the jury is out on whether these caps make a meaningful difference to player safety. And one expert on standards for sports equipment pointed out to NBC, helmets can only do so much to prevent fatal injuries because they ultimately can't control how hard or how often a player is hit or how their body might respond to being hit, all of which play a role in traumatic injuries. Dr. Cantu told the Associated Press, what really needs to happen is we need to reduce collisions in football.
No hits to the head are good, and you can eliminate most of the hits to the head in these collision sports by practicing the sport in a non-collision way.
Cohen's dad said he just wants to see more kids protected so other families don't have to go through what his is experiencing. Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. Starting in Ukraine, which is under more Russian attacks today in the western parts of the country. This comes after one of the most deadly attacks in the war so far in eastern Ukraine, where over 50 people were killed when missiles struck a military academy and hospital yesterday. Ukraine's foreign minister is now resigning, joining 5 other ministers who stepped down in recent days. That means 1/3 of Ukraine's cabinet is now vacant. In Gaza, the World Health Organization says the initial efforts to vaccinate children against polio are surpassing expectations. Israel and Hamas have agreed to a series of pauses in fighting to allow health workers to distribute the vaccine for polio, which Gaza had not seen for over 25 years until last month, when a 10-month-old was left partially paralyzed. The goal is to vaccinate a total of 640,000 children, and the WHO is roughly a quarter of the way there. In other news, the Department of Justice charged six senior Hamas leaders with planning the October 7th terrorist attack and for directing a decades-long campaign to endanger the security of the United States. The defendants include current Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar, the mastermind of the attack. The charges were filed in February and kept under seal so the U.S. could potentially take these leaders into custody, but the department says it chose to unseal them since half of the defendants have been reported dead. And finally, to the Paralympics in Paris, where an American teenager is leaving with two gold medals that he didn't totally see coming. First, 19-year-old Ezra Freck clinched gold in the men's 100-meter race.
Ezra Freck is getting into the mix! Ezra Freck, gold!
But see, that was just supposed to be his warm-up. Freck is a high jumper, primarily, and he mostly ran the 100-meter to get ready for that competition, which he also won yesterday with a jump just over 6 feet 4 inches. After the Games, he'll head to the University of Southern California, where he'll be the track and field program's first athlete to compete with an above-the-knee amputation. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. The New Yorker explores a growing real estate market for people who believe the end times are near. The bunker market is booming, and the magazine toured a couple of them to better understand the appeal. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.